It's time for Show Me the Franchise.
With Thomas and Frederick. With Thomas and Frederick.
It's time for Show Me the Franchise.
With Thomas and Frederick. With Thomas and Frederick.
Welcome to Show Me the Franchise, the podcast that talks about franchises of all shapes, sizes, backgrounds, genres, and types. I'm one of your hosts, Tom Stadler, here as usual with Queen Latifah. I can't believe it.
Oh.
Mr. Freddy.
I didn't catch where you're going with that first, but then I liked it in the end. Maybe that will come up. Who knows?
Maybe it will. Maybe it will. That was like my favorite moment, though, from the Golden Globes.
Yeah, I love a little Stephen Graham running around being joyful.
Yeah, he's been around for a while now, too, I feel like. Kind of sneaking up and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I knew him from, like, Lockstock.
Oh, yeah.
No. Is he in Lockstock or Snatch? Snatch is what I meant.
He's in some kind of Guy Ritchie movie.
I don't think he's in Lockstock, but he's in Snatch for sure.
I'll look that up as we're kind of going through this. But I think I knew him first from Boardwalk Empire. Did you ever watch that?
I've never finished it, but I definitely watched it. I think he's really good in The Irishman.
Oh, yeah.
Him and Al Pacino arguing about whether you can be 15 minutes late or 30 minutes late.
Yeah.
I just love it.
It's a good one. He is in Snatch.
That's what I figured, because he seems maybe like a little younger than the rest of those guys who are in Lockstock. Not by much, but like a little younger.
And he's a little more intelligible than some other people. I mean, I don't know. Even Vinnie Jones somehow comes off more intelligible than most of the guys in Lockstock. But Fred, we're kind of celebrating a special occasion here, because up until this year, the TV episode has been a Patreon-only episode. Trying to get people behind the paywall. But this year, we're giving a gift to our listeners.
Yeah, that was our plan the whole time, was to have a nice gift for our listeners and introduce them to the Patreon content.
Yeah, so if you have not yet signed up for the Patreon, just know you can get more episodes like this. But this one is built specifically for the main feed, but yet still a little bit of a pivot from our main feed episodes. Because we won't be doing all the same format. We're doing a little bit more of a, what would you even call this? Just like a award ceremony of sorts?
Yeah, like a five. I don't want to say top. I want the TOP word, because I don't want to have to rank these.
Yeah. Oh, so you're just going to go.
I mean, if you want to rank them, I can do it off the dome. But that was the hardest part. I got a top five easy. I have a plenty of follow-ups. But this is happening in real time. If you want that rank, we can do that rank.
So I guess I didn't really finalize a ranking. So I'm actually okay. I think I have my five. But I am going to maybe pivot depending on how this conversation goes.
I also need the caveat of I'm usually a TV waiter. There's definitely stuff I watched in real time this year, but I am like, I'll let seasons build up before I even get into something.
Oh, sure.
And definitely whole seasons. There's a few shows that I think would have been on my list, but I didn't finish. And I decided only things that I completed, even if I got like deep into it. And I have a good feeling about how I feel about it. I wanted to kind of also keep it a little different from yours, although I know we'll have overlap.
Oh, yeah. I think we will for sure. But I am also reminding us that we have the Night Country rule. That's what I'm calling this. And last year we established this. Actually, it might even have been the Fargo rule originally.
Yeah, because Night Country did start in January.
I think.
But I think I just maybe like miscalculated and really wanted it.
My feeling, though, is like, or I guess this is what we've decided up until now, and I think we should stand by this, is like, if a show has started before we do the episode, kind of like the Oscars, that gets looped into our awards, like, or our end of year look back.
So it's not a sci-fi show.
Oh.
I'm just being mean because I know why you want this rule played out already.
Really?
I think.
We'll see what you have to say.
Actually, and I don't even know if this show, I think it started pre-holiday, pre-end of year, and then finished. But I thought it finished before the end of the year, but I could be wrong.
I mean, basically, I think, though, when we first did this, Fargo season 5 had not yet completed. And we both wanted to talk about it. And we were like, we're going to allow this in our rankings, despite, or our end of year list, despite it not being done yet. So
Then what happened with Night Country?
I think it started like late December or early January, but it was still going as we were talking about it too. And we were both like, but this is a great vibe. Mm-hmm. It might have finished though by the time we talked, because we did it late last year. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But anyway, January shows I think are on the table.
Okay.
And that's, I've only bring that up because there was one that I was considering and I'm not yet settled on whether I'm going to have it in there or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't like it if it's one. I like the show, but I don't know if I like you using it, but that's fine.
Well, let's talk about it.
We'll see.
All right. Would you like the honors of going first?
Sure. I'll take the first one.
Okay. So we're going to talk about our five favorite shows from 2025. Mm-hmm. Please lead us off.
Let's just kick off with a big one that everyone's going to want to talk about.
Sure.
And I even forgot that it happened last year. I knew that it happened, but I forgot it was last year. Was I do every so often enjoy a Star Wars.
Oh.
So I think I'm going to put Andor on my list.
Nice.
The season two was like a nice 12 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how they released them in these like four-part chunks, kind of like four episodes apiece. It kind of was an interesting intersection with what's going on in the real world.
Yep.
And it's just nice to have Star Wars that feels grown up, because I think that is the trick of Star Wars, is you can kind of have it all the different genres. And we were getting a lot of kind of more Clone Wars-y stuff, which I'm glad people have that. And I love that for them, but it's never been like my thing.
Yeah.
So having Andor was a nice, I liked having a tactile Star Wars.
Yeah. Bureaucracy, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I can't remember who was talking about this recently, but they're like, we need more bureaucracy in TV shows because it's so prevalent in the real world right now of how much like bullshit falls downhill. And that's what kind of is the inciting events for so much of this stuff, that it's like, why not? And I agree with you though, too. I'm like, everything's been so Jedi heavy. Star Wars forever, and it's like, but the coolest character arguably from first few movies is Han Solo, like, and all he does is fucking shoot guns and trick people and you know. So
yeah, and I was gonna say that I like that it doesn't look like it uses the volume all the time, even though I'm sure there's some volume use in making that show. It doesn't look like it. Whereas when I watch Ahsoka, when I watch even the show that I liked that, what was the one that all the haters didn't like?
Oh, the
but then was the most, I liked the Acolyte story, but I still thought it looked very volumey and I didn't like that.
Sure. Okay.
That kind of all in one place look of these Star Wars shows is what I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And Andor didn't really have that. It looked like more of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. More like Rogue One, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's, I don't know. I'm like, I was debating if I was going to put this on my list or not. So I'm like, do we just talk it to death or do we not? But I'm revisiting my choices here. There's one other show that I'm very much debating whether we should talk about it, but it's a great show.
Yeah, and also, you know, like you can be like in your top whatever, and it can open up another discussion if you do have another thing that you're thinking of being in that spot. I think everyone knows you liked Andor, and that's why I kind of half-heartedly just wanted to get out of the way, because it's kind of like it had been talked about, and it is good, and I like it. I like the parallels to the real world. I love the French Revolution parallels. I love everything about that. I love that it actually has character study in it.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of villain of the piece that's a half villain kind of in his like relationship with his mom and how that like plays into his everyday life. Yeah. Like stuff like that isn't in the other shows.
No. Great speeches too in Andor. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, Stellan Skarsgård just doing some work. I love watching my guy just kind of.
And I don't know, is that post-stroke Stellan? Because I know he's like still acting, and I think like some of his newer stuff coming out now, he you know, he's doing post-stroke, which is kind of amazing.
No, I don't know. It might have been pre-stroke, but when did he have that? Was it
I'm not exactly sure, but it was like not recent, but like within the last 5 years.
I think it might be Pulse then, but either way, he was doing good stuff.
It's always good.
Yeah. No, for the sake of mixing things up, Andor is maybe like the just missed my list because there was another show that I also thought did some interesting things with its season two that I wanted to discuss. And that would be Severance season two, which also I was like, that came out last year. Pretty crazy. But I thought, did you watch all of Severance
season two? I did not finish season two. I plan to, maybe that's going to be like now at this point, I'm going to have to go back and do everything.
Oh, yeah.
Because I definitely just fell off for no reason than just stuff going on. And that's a show that's hard to like, pick up back in. But I enjoyed it, you know.
Wasn't season one, then you call that like a fever dream in the way you watched it?
A bit, yeah. Also, it reminds me a lot of that Westworld feeling where you constantly have that like probing of what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
And that is exhausting.
Sure.
I love the show, or at least the first season, but I do find that kind of television where you kind of are like racking on to every second. I think at that point in my time, my life, I was like not in the zone. So I wanted to wait till I was in the zone. But why don't you talk a little more about it?
Well, yeah, I think it makes sense to watch it in one big chunk, which I mean, you watch it week to week. That's my preferred way to watch a show. I do love the way they kind of chunk released Andor because I did feel like you gave people the idea of like, okay, you can catch up. Now here's the next part. Now here's the next part. I don't love a full series drop. And there is a couple on my list that one on the list did it that way, but we'll get to that. But I thought Severance season two, it was a little more choppy water than season one, which I thought was a little tighter because you were really like in deep with the mystery. But then I think wherever it was kind of choppy along the way, it really stuck the landing and ended on a place where you were like, oh shit, where are we going to go from here? Because now it seems like all the cards are on the table. Everything's going to just kind of go upended. Not to give away too much, because obviously I want you to enjoy it, but I think you get enough of these interesting like explorations of who these people are outside of the office just as much as you do inside the office, which first season you kind of, there's a reason why you don't know who everybody is necessarily outside of the office. So kind of getting to see more than just Adam Scott outside makes a lot more interesting content here. And I think you have a more interesting storytelling, and I don't know, I really felt like it was a show. If it's a show that I drop my phone for and like, you know, you're not reading anything and you're like looking around, you know, and you're actually just focused on what's happening, then I'm like, okay, this has me. Like it's unconscious where you're just suddenly like, okay. And you start leaning in, and that's what I feel like this show does so well. Like beyond the mysteries, I just think the writing's really interesting. I think Ben Stiller has an interesting take. So that's my thoughts on Severance. Very excited for season three.
Yeah, I was going to ask if that's been renewed. I assumed it was.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
Right. That's a good number two.
Yeah.
So far, that is a Disney Plus show.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that? Is that
Apple TV?
Apple TV.
Yeah.
Be interesting to keep track of these different streamers.
Yeah, maybe we can do a count of which streamer has the most. But let's go on to your number two pick.
I'm going to pick for my number two, The Rehearsal Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know that can be a bit of acquired taste. The whole Nathan For You thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed season two about pilots and how they talk to one another and how he's kind of doing these small experiments, making comedy with it. But also, like, there is a bit of questioning about things that are going on now with, like, planes and pilots and all this. And I think to create a comedy show that's asking questions from a, like kind of a different angle into that thing, like what's causing these sort of accidents while also being extremely entertaining, I thought was just great TV.
Yeah.
It gave me the Ali G feels, which I miss, or just the, like, Sacha Baron Cohen, where, like, there's a point being made, there's humor, there's cringe, but it all kind of is in service of something, which I feel like Nathan, I always want to call him Nathan Fillion, but that's not his name. I'm just going to keep, Fillion. I'll just call him Nathan for you. I feel that's not always present in his humor, but now this kind of felt like locked in with like a subject matter and a point that was trying to be made, and yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Well, it was certainly like an exploration of something that felt more like meta commentary, because the first season is also just like so fourth wall breaking. You almost feel like lost in it, like especially the episode when he's like has somebody go up and teach the class who's trying to be him or whatever. Because the whole idea of like rehearsing is very fascinating. So the idea that he was like, I'm going to get into pilot mode to the point where he goes and flies a plane is... And spoiler alert, but I mean, everything should be a spoiler alert, I think, on this.
Yeah, and also just like the kind of realizations with like autism that are in that show are kind of like fascinating. I'm sure he's playing into it a bit, but the moment where he's like getting his own quiz revealed about it, and then it's kind of like met with that people who have autism watch his show, and the idea of rehearsing is like a big concept.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that was a brain seed when he first started the show, I don't know, or if that was naturally found. Either way, I think it's asking interesting questions and finding interesting things how a documentary should.
Yeah.
So it's functioning in both ways. Whereas like some of his previous stuff, like I said before, didn't really have that. And I'm enjoying watching it. And I didn't find it as like cringe as it could be.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're calling out, though, too, that's just so interesting about the show is you really don't know how much is written and how much is just like a revelation as they're like just going through this. And I think he is asking a lot of interesting questions. Like, it's an acquired taste. I enjoyed it. Like, I don't know that it quite made my top five, but because I kind of forgot that it was even last year. Again, I think we can even talk about it now, too. Like, last year was a pretty packed year for good shows. Like, a lot of stuff came out. A lot of interesting things came about. But, yeah, I mean, I'm here for another the rehearsal season if he's up for it. But I don't know if that's in the cards or not.
Yeah, well, we will see. All right. I look forward to whatever he does, even if it's not the rehearsal. I'm sure he'll have some. If it's not the rehearsal, it'll be something else more interesting.
Well, you even made the comparison to like Sacha Baron Cohen, right? It's like at the very least he could be just doing something that's kind of like, okay, you did Borat, now you're gonna do Ali G, and then you're gonna do, what was the other one, Bruno?
Bruno. He also had like a really good, like super scathing critical show on Showtime.
Oh yeah,
where he was doing characters. The character, it was not as funny, but it was more like enlightening about certain like politics. I think now it'd probably seem quaint, but at the time watching it, it was crazy seeing all these different politicians being caught in these moments that he puts them in, and I do kind of miss that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at where things have gone. Yeah, I think he was just peeling back the layer of ugliness that was in politics before we really have now gotten the full blast of all these different terrible people that are in power. Yeah, no, very, very good pick. I'm going to crack the seal for my next pick, I think, because this one was a very late entry. It was
the HBO Max.
Yes, HBO. So we have an HBO, an Apple, and a Disney. This next one's going to come from Netflix for me. So we're going to have our first entry on the board. And we already referenced it up top. It's Adolescence. I wasn't sure what to think about this show after what I had heard and what I had seen about it. And I was like, is this just going to be a really tough hang? But what I wasn't prepared for when I finally did get to watch, and I watched it all in one night. I think I told you that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was not prepared for how well made the show was. Like, everyone's like, oh, the single takes, the one takes, but the way that they position so many of the people, the way the camera focuses on some of the faces of the people involved, and like it's their acting that tells you as much about the story as anything, you know, because it's like up until that point you almost feel like a fly on the wall watching this whole like situation unfold with this kid, and you're like, And it's just so brilliant how it takes you along for the ride. And, you know, it's like you feel like a film nerd when you're like, oh, look at the way that they've panned the camera. And now they're pulling in on. But then you just it feels like, yeah, you're just constantly taken from place to place to place. And I just was blown away. And then especially I think it's like the third episode where he's having the one on one with like the independent counselor who is kind of like evaluating the kid. I was just like, oh man, this is some next level shit. This is starting to get really like disturbing how not unusual it would seem for a situation like this to like even occur, despite how horrible it is, right?
Yep. Well, I'll just go ahead and say that was my number three too. I watched it. I think everyone watched it in one go because it's not that it's three episodes, right? 60 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
And they are, like you said, oneers. It feels like theater, so it kind of just happens. So it goes by very quick. I really liked it, and I know we've talked about him at the top, was also just like, I've always been a Stephen Graham fan, and like, I think this moved up my list because of all the like respect and love he's getting for this, and also the young actor. He was great as well.
Yeah.
I think the whole just them in the van and the paint, like all that stuff, it just shows his range. He was on that Off Menu podcast I like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The three of them, like him and James Acaster together, is pretty great.
I bet. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they're going to do with like that team, because I know also Steve Graham like had like behind the scenes credit of that too. Like he was very involved with that whole show.
I think he wrote it. Or he co-wrote it.
I didn't want to say that because in case I was wrong, but that's what I thought. It was like he was, and I mean, from what I know about him, he's a guy who grew up, you know, in like not a super rich area, tough kid. So I think him kind of extrapolating his experience into a modern experience was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's also co-written with Jack Thorne, who I just know did the Cursed Child play.
Yeah, that's what I was just looking up, Jack Thorne and what else he was involved with. He did the Cursed Child? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I didn't know that. But, I mean, yeah, it makes you very interested to see where they'll go next and what kind of story. Because obviously they're not going to be able to do another season of this. I mean, I don't think anybody wants that.
You know?
The story's told. It's done. It's all over. But it... He's got a knack. And he did great at acting. Like I said, you were talking about that fourth episode. I mean, even in the first episode when he's kind of like trying to be there for his son and he's like, I don't know why he picked me like to be his, like, what do they call him? Not his observer, but like his, like, and it's not like their supporter, but they gave him like a very specific name, like. Mm. Or is like it's something that's like a legal guardian.
But. Oh, gotcha. Yeah, this is when I watched like when it dropped, and then it did kind of it like left the ether, and then when awards kind of came in, the conversations around it kind of trickled back in.
Yeah, I think things get kind of goofed up though with TV, especially because the Emmys are like middle of like the year or late like fall, and then you have the Golden Globes, which are January.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, didn't all this already happened? Like, I feel like Severance was always felt like, okay, what season are we not acknowledging now? Or The Bear, you know, it's like that too. I feel like we're always constantly like in between where those are. But yeah, Adolescence was a pleasant surprise considering the subject matter. But I really thought it was really well done. So
no, it was definitely like emotional, but I didn't feel like traumatized by it.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
They do a good job of not telling and not showing too much, which I know is usually not what you want to do. But I think in this situation, considering how delicate it is and considering the ages of the characters involved, you don't necessarily want to see, you know, child violence, right? So it's like, okay, we can extrapolate from people's points of view and what they're telling us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I fully agree with you though. Well, you said that was your number.
Yeah,
three.
That was like a shared pick.
Okay, so I'm like, should I go again then?
Sure.
Okay. Well, then I will pull up my next one, and this is the one that I really had a tough time with because I wanted to put something else up here too. I just enjoyed the shit out of this show. And I feel like it also got a ton of awards. So we're going back to Apple TV. You want to take a guess?
Is it Parables?
No.
The studio?
Studio.
Oh, shit.
Do you have the studio?
I got the studio on here too.
Oh, God dang it. Really? Which one is that for you?
Oh, my, remember my list is.
There's no order.
There's no order.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the studio. Why don't you lead us off this time, though?
It's just I was just happy to have Seth and Evan back together again in whatever format. I was kind of meh when I heard what the premise was, because I was just like, you know, like, I've never seen The Player. I'm not like, I like Hail Caesar, but like, I'm not a big, like, the studio behind the scenes, like, we're making the movies, even though I like the movies.
Sure.
And I liked the character Seth Rogen plays because, you know, he likes the movies. And I didn't know I was also going to be treated for a similar ride to, like, Adolescence, where I was going to have, like, this kind of one-shot intensity, high energy. I got to laugh a lot. And then there was just, like, I love when they have people that they know play themselves in shittier ways, kind of like in This Is the End.
Yeah.
They got to kind of do that humor again. And I think when those two make a movie together, there really hasn't been a bad one.
Yeah.
You know, there's ones that haven't done as well. Like, I think, like, Long Shot, which I like a lot. But when I finally did watch it, I enjoyed every single one. And it's hard to find TV nowadays that was that funny.
Yeah.
And it was extremely funny, and it was great to see all those faces. Love some Dave Franco.
I was like, yeah, I was actually going to dig in with you, like, who are some of the people that you really liked? I mean, not to give away any of your performance picks ahead of time here, but, like, Zoe Kravitz, I think, definitely was a surprise.
I like Paul Dano for his little bit that he had.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm. Or was it Efron who had, like, the party that they weren't inviting Seth Rogen to?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't say he would be a highlight, but I did enjoy just the interaction where you kind of imagine he would be a guy kind of hold.
Yeah, as a podcast fan, they had, was it Ryan Rosillo from, God, what is that podcast called? He's got like the big entertainment podcast. He's kind of like the Deadline of podcasts.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about,
though. But yeah, he's the guy who they're like running into in Las Vegas when Walter White's struggling.
Yeah. Cranston. I mean, we have to just, there's a lot of veterans in this show that are doing good. I mean, and I'm not going to tip my hand because maybe one or two might come up when we talk performances, but I'll say for now, at least Cranston definitely, he was showing off his comedic chops again. It was good to see him kind of getting back to his roots and just acting like a total weirdo, even though he's supposed to be a studio head, and you kind of buy it. Like I was telling you before we even started recording, I just came back from Los Angeles. And when you see some of these people around at, like, I mean, I didn't see like anybody like big name producers. I mean, I wouldn't be able to recognize them necessarily, but just seeing people out in the open and at restaurants and the way that they kind of like go about their day, you're like, oh, there's just something a little, they're in their own little world. That's the way I'd say it. So it's very flighty, but yeah, very funny show. And yeah, we just don't have enough comedy right now.
Ron Howard
doing just I feel like anytime he plays himself, it's always a great ad. Other than the narrator in Arrested Development, which I guess he's just the narrator, but
he's good when he plays himself in Arrested Development too.
Yeah, that's true. But also when he plays himself in, like, The Simpsons is the other one. What else does he play himself in? Or is those kind of the two?
That's all I can think of.
That might be all we need.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the studio was, I don't know. And got to thank Sal Saperstein, obviously, for this episode.
I can't think of his name now. He's going to play Elon Musk, though, in a movie.
Oh, Ike Barinholtz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when he was on Eastbound and Down as like the Russian baseball player. That was like my first introduction to him, and then he's always been good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, most of his lines in movies you can tell are improvised.
Yeah. Cause he's kind of got that vibe about him where he just seems like he just shoots from the hip a little bit.
Yes.
I think the role that really caught my eye with him for some reason was in Blockers, which is a movie mm-hmm. that aged well with me for some reason, stuck with me. Just because him, Cena, and then like Leslie Mann, like having like their own kind of chance. And it's like people you wouldn't have given a spotlight to, I feel like, otherwise.
All right.
So very fun. Well, I guess I'll keep going down.
What you got?
So I'll get to my number two pick then, which was another HBO show, Hacks Season 4. I've talked about Hacks, I think, maybe every year now, and the thing's still throwing fastballs. Talk about comedies on TV. This show is very funny. And this was a very interesting season because it was all about them making a Tonight Show. And so, like, you always want to see, like, what would that writer's room look like? How do they build, like, the show out and everything? And so you're just kind of along for this ride. And you almost forget where the show started, where it's, like, it's just them kind of, like, circumstantially coming together, you know, kind of tail end of their career, or, like, kind of both crashing out in their careers a little bit or nowhere to go. And so they start building this thing together. And now they land at, like, kind of at odds with one another, but still going after this huge event and like something that seems so big for the lead character's career. And Jean Smart is just still, like I said, she's throwing heaters this whole season. She's just gravitating and it's amazing. Have you caught any of Hacks
yet? I have not watched Hacks.
That's going to be, I think, one of those shows where I think when you finally get to it at some point,
Most comedies I build up till they're done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it said, I don't know if they're going beyond one more season. I think that might be it. And that might be just perfect because they've had four very good seasons, like very few low points, very few dull points. There's always forward trajectory. There's always good conflict that creates a lot of good humor and good tension. You know, even though I know Hannah Einbinder now coming out that she's another Nepo, but she's one of those good ones. She's kind of a Jack Quaid of sorts in that regard. Which, if you forgot, it's Lorraine Newman's daughter.
Mm.
I'm sorry, Lorraine Newman.
There you go.
I gotta pay respect to the OG.
Oh, I didn't know what that voice was, but I liked it.
I mean, it's playing with a little bit of, you know, a little Godfather or something. I think like Sopranos has kind of been in my brain recently too. Because we started watching, speaking about TV that came out this year, that is not going to make my list, but have you watched any of Wonder Man yet?
I have not, no.
Well, there's an episode where he runs into Joey Pants, and it's just a hilarious moment of, like, this is a Marvel show, but it also feels very The Studio, and actually, it feels more like The Studio than any Marvel show. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's just them making the movies.
I like that guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Abdul Mateen.
Mm-hmm.
He's good. You get a lot of Ben Kingsley, though, and it's let him cook.
Okay.
He's doing good. I would say it's surprised me how much it is not an MCU show. And it's not just, oh, it's fun. It's like, no, there's some shit here. Like they're doing something way different than like even Daredevil or anything. So,
okay.
Check it out. You see for yourself.
It's fun.
It's more than fun. It's good.
Okay.
It's good. But yeah. I was like, where was I going with this? Joey Pants. Give me the Sopranos vibes, you know?
Because
mm-hmm. I had to look it up then. He did win an Emmy for Sopranos. That's his only Emmy win.
Yeah, that's a heavy part. Heavy part there.
It's good though.
Yeah, we had that the theater, they had their Secret Santa.
Mm-hmm.
And my gift for Secret Santa, I wanted to get season one on DVD because I figured I could go to like Media Exchange. I was going to get the whole series.
Yeah.
But they were like $10 a pop. And I'm like, that's too much for, you know, there was a limit. So I went to a few different ones. I could not find season one. I found like two, three, all the other ones. And eventually I had season two in my hand. I'm like, okay, I guess it's still like a bit. But I did like the idea of it being functional bit where if someone hadn't watched The Sopranos, they could pop in the discs, get started. So when I was going to check out behind the counter, they were like, oh, well, we also have these and they have these huge collections. I'm like, those must be the whole show. Again, that's probably going to be pricey. They were seasons one and season two on VHS.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I was like, I actually will take season one on VHS. So I put that in and I went to Grappi's. I got like expensive pasta, like expensive sauce that was from New Jersey.
Yeah.
And some like the dried breadsticks, but like from Italy.
Oh, man.
And I packed all that stuff on top and Josh Randall ended up with that. Oh, he was pretty happy.
I mean, as we have learned, an Italian in his nature, he showed me his 23andMe the other day. And I was like, oh, okay, so you got some Italy in you.
But that VHS case is nice looking. You know, it comes in a little box. You pull it out. It's got five VHSs.
Oh, man. That's awesome. So it was a good purchase.
Yeah, and like it was $3. Like, that's why I had to get so much better shit. Like, I was like, well, this is only $3. So I bought like the nicest sauce and pasta I could find. Because I was like, all right, I need to get up to the limit now.
Yeah. Oh, my God, though. That's a great gift. I love the idea of it. Anyway, that's for Sopranos, which is not a show I watched last year. What's that?
I was just saying we could have used a little extra time on this one. It looked like.
Oh yeah, well we still got a little ways to go. We got a little ways to go.
I was just adding a little extra.
Yeah, it's good. Some good pepper on top of the steak that we got cooking right now. I guess so. I just put my number two. Are we down to number one already?
Yeah, because we had two kind of crossovers.
Do you have any honorable mentions you want to give before you give your last pick?
I have two. Okay. And one I might talk about in a later section.
Okay.
That was kind of my have my cake and eat it too, but I will say my like six and seven and a seven that I still haven't finished yet, but I liked, so I didn't count it, was I watched about half of The Lowdown.
Oh.
I like it a lot. I really like it's Sterling Harjo is his name.
Yes.
I really like his stuff, everything I've seen. It was just another, like, I fell off, and now I'm going to have to rewatch everything. But, I mean, you got Gene Triplehorn.
Yeah.
You got Tracy Letts. You've got, there's a bunch of people in that. My guy, that was my Carmex.
Oh. That's funny.
I can't think of his name from The Thing.
Kyle MacLachlan?
Well, Kyle MacLachlan we love. But also from They Live, The Thing.
Keith David.
Yeah, I couldn't think of Keith David. Two first names.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's just too easy to remember.
Mm-hmm. But this is a show very much like my other honorable mention, which I love any show that says this is where we're taking place in this city, this town. And you're going to like breathe it in. We're going to have like local flair do it. We're going to like have people lean into the dialect, but we're also going to feel like the cultural weight of the area.
Yeah.
And the show is also kind of a companion piece in my head to Killers of the Flower Moon, you know, to like in both in Oklahoma, I believe, and like similar-ish areas, kind of about similar things. But this one's kind of a more lighthearted noir. Kind of the stuff, it's like the Killers of the Flower Moon, that stuff's in the backdrop of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm excited to finish it, but I'm only having as honorable mention because I didn't finish it.
Yeah, I gotcha.
The other one I was going to throw out, which had a lot of heat for me, but then kind of subsided for me, was Task.
Oh, yeah.
And I still liked it a lot. It's just it wasn't top five. It is probably like six or seven for me, though. This is another one that Brad Inglesby is the creator, and he made Mayor of Easttown, is really good about like this place, this takes a year. Everyone's going to do the voice and we're gonna have local like references and it's gonna feel lived in.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I loved about that show, plus the performances. I just kind of lost the plot a little bit with it.
Yeah, that was where I kept struggling. I actually still haven't finished Task because I feel like we'd drop in, I would try and remember what was happening, and I'm like, I feel like I almost have to start from the top and do this again because I just felt like I was losing the plot. I was losing a little bit of like, who's who again? What's this guy's name? And I hate that feeling when you're spending more time trying to remember what the thing was about. It's like, it's a show you almost just like, it needs to be like Sopranos where it's like you pop it in, pull out some dinner, you're like eating and you're just like watching, you're really intently picking up on all the pieces because it was really well acted, but
yeah,
I hear you. I also had the lowdown, and this is maybe going to be a have your cake and eat it too type situation where it was that or Severance season two for me that was going to be the number five because I love the lowdown. I thought it was really good, but I will have more of a chance to talk about what I really loved about the lowdown later. But yeah, that was definitely my number one, like, honorable mention that I wanted to bring up. So I'm glad you brought it up. The other thing I wanted to bring up too was Alien Earth was another show I really liked. I love Noah Hawley stuff. I just liked that vibe of being back, like, in the alien world where they're doing some interesting things, and it felt like it was an alien show that wasn't about the aliens, and that's the first time we've really done that. Even like Prometheus felt like a long burn to like explaining how the xenomorphs got to be. So the fact that we got more about the people or like the cyborgs or the androids and all that, like, that was really interesting to me. Did you watch all of Alien Earth?
Yes. Okay. And that was another, that was a close call for me for being in my top five as
gotcha.
Well.
Gotcha. The other one I wanted to call out, cause haven't finished it yet, cause it's not over yet. And it's not, so it doesn't really qualify, was A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which just started this past month. And just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in.
I don't know. I've only seen 3 30-minute episodes, so I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. But I do like it.
You vibing with it, though?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay. That's just something I might be talking about further next year. I'll say that. We'll see. We'll see how it ends. But my number one.
Actual number one.
Oh, wait, no. It's your turn.
Yeah.
Number one.
So this is more of a, I'm surprised this worked. So yeah. Much. It's not even my favorite show, but I'm giving it, even though I'm not ranking, I'm giving it number one spot because I was like, oh, this wasn't a piece of shit. I'm going to give it to Welcome to Derry.
Oh, wow.
A show that I was like, I love Stephen King stuff. I love scary stuff. These kind of shows never are that good, but, you know, I'm going to go back because it's stuff I like. And it exceeded my expectations. And yes. There's a lot of times these Stephen King adaptations will pick up Dark Tower stuff and start playing with it. Yeah. And I'm like, don't pick that up. You don't know how to play with it. You're not old enough. You don't know how to play with it. You know, they kind of just use it. This is the first one where they're like circling stuff and it is a little fanficky, but it doesn't feel like ridiculous to me. Yeah. Like, it kind of checks out most of the stuff they're doing and the things they're alluding to in the bigger Kingiverse. I mean, there's like just the outline of the situation Pennywise has around him in the woods just remind me very much of Dark Tower and like the circles of the beam and stuff like that. And I know that was the point of it, that it was supposed to look like that. We've got the turtle in there.
Yeah.
I also thought the scares in it actually were like kind of freaky. Like, the first episode is very intense and very good, yeah. I thought. And the creature, don't love the machete creature CG, but he does have some interesting like creature stuff in it that works for me.
Yeah. I agree with you. This actually was another honorable mention for me that I did not list because I was waiting to see if maybe you were going to say it, and you did.
Yeah, and I love one of my favorite chapters. They don't do like the scene from the book, but in the chapter of it is there's a chapter about the Black Spot, which is that bar that the it's like, are they in the army? Some military, yeah, where they can go and have a drink because they're black and they don't get to go into Derry because Derry is racist as shit because it's got a giant evil behind it, you know, which is kind of the whole it thing.
Right.
And just like, that's kind of an example of how it's using the book that's huge. They made two movies and there's still a lot of like creepy Pennywise it stuff that you can pull out. Like, there's flashbacks to, you know, and they do this in the Welcome to Derry show where you're going back to like 1600s and it does all that in the big it book.
Yeah.
This show cherry picks some of that stuff, but also tells its own story.
Mm-hmm.
And it does connect to the movies and the books in a way that's kind of new and interesting. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was a pleasant surprise. I'll agree with you on that front because I really wasn't sure what to expect when you're like, we're going to do an it prequel. but I think it captured that 60s vibe that reminded me a lot of the 90s made for TV movie. Because right in the book, it is does take place in the 60s at first.
It's 50s and 80s in the book.
Okay.
And it's 80s in today in the new in the Muschietti remakes.
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm. So this felt like more of a throwback, though, at least to that era, because you had like people wearing like the jeans, they had like the greaser like jackets and haircuts like the bad guys or the bullies did. And so I appreciated that we kind of were going back to this era a little bit where things seemed a little more simple and it was a little more like word of mouth versus like even in the 80s where it feels like, oh, you can, you know, just, I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, check things out like your local like spot and I don't know.
And because there is so much, even not just in the It book, there's so much dairy like stuff that Stephen King has written that they can pull from. And I think the plan is like multiple seasons, but it wouldn't pick up. It's not going to be picking up from these characters. It's going to time jump the like every so years that the It cycle happens again. And like, I think once the next season could be happening before this season, yeah. but like by 18 years or it could go ahead. Like, so I think that's interesting that it's whole new stories, same setting. That's the way to go if they want to make more.
Well, we
they are.
Get introduced to a group of characters that look like they had encountered something like this before, right? It's like the Native American group that's mm-hmm. involved there. And again, you kind of mentioned that vibes of like Killer of the Flower Moon. This almost kind of reminded me of that too. Like here you have a lot of people who it's like, yeah, they have been here. They've known about this force. And it's like this idea that like, yeah, Native Americans knew this land. And then, you know, white settlers just came and they're like, oh, fuck this shit. We're just going to blow everything up or like, you know, like ruin everything. And it's like, okay, you guys are messing with an ecosystem that was like very delicate mm-hmm. balance. It was very common, like good commentary on like reality. So, yeah, very much appreciated it. Very good storytelling. You're not going to be too surprised by number one. So that was another HBO show you just did. I'm going back to Apple TV. You already know what I'm talking about. It's going to be Pluribus. I loved this show. I thought it was so, I don't know, just a really good commentary on people. I mean, I don't even know how much of the premise I want to get into if people haven't watched it yet. Because have you watched all of it?
No. I started it.
And that's been it so far.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to watch it.
All right. Well, then I'll keep quiet about a lot of like turns and twists, but I mean, it's a very interesting premise. It's not what you think it's going to be when it gets started. Did you watch the first episode?
Yes. Okay. Not all of it, but most of it.
Okay.
It's very like if Twilight Zone was made by Vince Gilligan.
Yeah. That's
kind of what it feels like. So it's methodical and character driven, but it does have that kind of like throwback sci-fi feel to it.
It does kind of seem to be calling back to like his X-Files roots a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'll say that because obviously there is a very big sci-fi element to it, which I think would scare off some people, especially if you're expecting Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. It's not those shows, but it also is in the way that it's made, and it takes place in New Mexico, so you kind of feel like you're back in that setting. But like,
Area 51.
Yeah, it's true. And it's just, it does so much in the things that it doesn't say. Again, you know how I was saying earlier, like, oh, adolescence does such a good job with tell and not show. This is completely the opposite. It's very much show, not tell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when film, TV,
the visual TV
media gets good. The TV, the television,
the TV-ish.
But yeah, I mean, I don't want to give away too much. I don't want to give away too much of the reveals. But just knowing that there's a big sci-fi element that's kind of tying together everybody in the world except for a select few people. And you're led by Ray Seahorn, who was the very unsung hero of Better Call Saul. It really felt like Vince Gilligan was kind of on a mission here of like, they didn't recognize you for really good work. Let me make something for you where you are front and center and people can realize how good you are. And she is excellent in this. If that might be a small transition to our performances, because that might be one I'll probably be talking about, but
you want to do performances and then throwback?
I mean, we could maybe just jump to throwback. I'll just kind of put a pin in
okay.
Ray Seahorn for now. But really, I mean, it's just I think it's the most accessible sci-fi show that I've seen, because I think Vince Gilligan just knows how to tie so many different themes together. You know, things that feel weird, things that feel a little scary, funny, dramatic, tense, everything. He just can really balance so much of that stuff. And Pluribus is worth an Apple TV Plus subscription. I think people are going to come out. It might not be for everyone. I'll say that. If it doesn't hook you, I get it, because it is weird, but it's very entertaining. And if you just enjoy just kind of meditating and you like a show that you're going to put your phone down, I think it's going to be one of those.
I like it.
That's all I have to say about that. But
poor Scum.
Yeah. Which is not a TV show, but maybe it should have been.
That'd be good.
Because isn't there a whole aspect of that book where he goes to space?
That's the sequel.
Oh, really?
He goes to space in the sequel, I believe.
Did you read them?
No, I just know they exist. Oh. The second one's crazy. I know that.
I feel like it just... We could have a whole episode about Forrest Gump. What I was going to say before I forget, got to do an It episode now, I think. Because now, that is indeed a giant franchise.
We got It?
Yep. Book, two different adaptations of the book, and now a prequel series. It's like, I think we... Maybe we'll wait to see where it goes in the next year or two, but we should definitely do one.
Very unhinged Steven Weber audiobook.
Yeah. Is there really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. Next road trip maybe that I do, whenever the hell that's going to be.
Yeah. I think your companion would love that.
Oh, yes. I think anytime she can get me to listen to an audiobook or read a book, it'll be good. But yeah, I guess that's our top five shows for this year, plus a couple honorable mentions. But we don't just talk about the top shows. I guess I didn't really tee up the structure. I was just like, let's just dive in.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with it being a little loose.
Show, not tell. That's the whole point of this episode. That's what we've been talking about, right? So yeah. Let's move on to our next one. We're going to do our favorite show that did not come out in 2025 that you watched last year.
All right. I will go first, I decided.
Okay, great.
So I'm actually still currently going through this, and it's a little bit of a cheat. It's a show we've all seen, probably all seen multiple times, but there's a new way to watch it, and it's quite enjoyable. I've been enjoying a show I never thought I'd roll back for another, like, 10 years, probably.
Okay.
A little bit of The Office.
Oh.
And I loved The Office. I watched it when it was coming out. I kind of got oversaturated with Office fandom.
Yeah.
You know? So many dumb t-shirts, you know?
Yeah.
But I kind of got caught into watching on Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
A station or a streaming service we haven't mentioned. I knew they had these things called the super fan episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And originally I assumed it was like, okay, they're just going to stick some deleted scenes in. And there is a little bit of that, but they now have the super fan episodes for every episode 1 through 9.
Mm-hmm.
And the run times are now like 20 minutes to like instead of 21 minutes, like 30 to 40 minutes.
Interesting.
There's a good like 10 minutes. Some are a little short, but most of them have like another 10 minutes added.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just added jokes and bits. It's like layering context and character stuff in a way that I actually found very interesting. Like I couldn't think of any specific examples off the top of my head, but there are certain like things, relationships, like dynamics in the show that are kind of made a lot clearer. There's a lot more like business shoe leather in it, which is actually I kind of found slightly interesting, like the like transitions that Dunder Mifflin goes through throughout the show. There is just more of it, and they did it for every episode of the whole show, so I thought this was a good time to go through, and I've actually really enjoyed it. I haven't found it boring because I always assumed, like, I've seen these so many times. Like, I'm kind of over it.
Yeah.
But I'm really enjoying this, something I never thought I would enjoy.
So is it extra footage that they had that they've now put into the episodes.
Yep, and it's cohesive. Like, every once in a while, it feels a bit like deleted scene shoved in, but mostly it just feels like a chunkier episode.
Interesting.
It's like a Comedy Today, which are like 30 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I didn't realize, though, that they even did that. I just knew that they were doing something called a super fan episode. Yeah. I didn't know what it was all
if
about.
If you're an Office fan, and even if you're like, oh, well, I don't know if I want to rewatch, but you are playing with the idea of the rewatch, it's, I think it's worth it. Okay. And like I said, I was like, I kind of like that part of my life's over. But going through, I've quite enjoyed it.
Hey, I mean, nothing wrong with going back and enjoying an old friend, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did love The Office when it first came out, and then I watched it all the way through to the end. I might have skipped a season or two, maybe in the middle there when it got kind of like, a little long in the tooth. But it'd be interesting to go back at some point. I don't know if I'll be rushing to do it, but I'm excited to hear that there's actually a different way to enjoy it now that's on Peacock. And I do have Peacock, so I'm happy to hear that. It is also funny that the Office theme, when you're singing it, sounded a little like the E.T. theme.
It does.
And I was like,
the E.T. show.
And I was like, E.T.? That's why I was kind of giving you a perplexed look at first. Like, what are you singing? And then it made sense when you said it. So, The Office. Interesting, though. Good pick. Good pick. I was like, remembering what I picked. And I do have mine. I went with The Golden Girls, a show I never watched as a child. A show I had very little exposure to other than just kind of knowing about it. But we were looking for, my wife and I enjoy a nice little like nighttime kind of wind down show, something that's maybe not brainless, but you know what I mean? You don't want to pop on an episode of whatever, you know, like The Severance or something at like 9 o'clock, right? It's like, okay, just a little treat before bed, something. So why not spend it with our good friends, Blanche and Dorothy. And it's been fun. It's kind of funny. A little nod to Pluribus, actually, because that's also kind of her, like, whatever you want to call it, like her like background show, or like her like comfort show, is throwing on Golden Girls. And that's kind of what she does at some point in it. But I find that the writing is always interesting in old sitcoms. Mm-hmm. All the humor does not age well, but I think still it's interesting to see a show where they gave a highlight to. And we talked a little bit about it on the Real Housewives episode, right? Women of a certain age who never really had, I think, just a show about them that wasn't necessarily about their husbands or their families or whatever. It's just like, no, they're just single gals in Florida for whatever reason. And they go and they date people, or they go and they on vacation, or they explore their relationships with each other. And I think it's fun. And Betty White was a treasure. And I really realized now, like, oh, this is why she was so beloved. She was hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to the Don Cheadle episode yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Which I'm kind of surprised we haven't yet. That must be really late, because we're pretty far into the series.
Well, Mitch Hurwitz was a writer, too, for a while on Golden Girls.
He was, yeah.
I know, that's cut his teeth there before making Arrested.
Which that kind of makes sense with some of the humor that they have. But they had a lot. They do have a lot of surprising cameos. Like Cesar Romero was like a recent cameo on there, or just a guest appearance. And he was even in his old age, he was a big dude, a tall dude. Very surprising. But interesting to see people like that in their old age, when I remember him as this, like the Joker in the 60s Batman series. And like, oh, here's this guy now at kind of the end of his career, like a younger Dick Van Dyke who's somehow still alive. 100 years young. Keep going, Dick. But yeah, Golden Girls, a lot of fun. Should we talk a little bit then about some of our favorite performances?
Sure.
So we'll do a couple performances, and we will not dissect them by gender, but more just about our two favorite lead roles and our two favorite supporting roles, because obviously gender identity can take a lot of different forms, right? So pick any that intrigued you, and I think we can kind of switch off going with our leads and then our supporting. Who did you have do we even want to do lead and supporting, or just our four favorite?
I just got four people here.
All right.
Well, then let's four nice actors.
Then go for it.
All right. I went with the lead of Task because I didn't have Task on my top five. So, and I think acting noms is where it should be anyway. I have Tom Pelfrey, the lead. Great accent, great intensity, but also great softness. Likeable doofus. He was in Ozark. He was very good too.
I actually never finished Ozark. I only watched the first few episodes. He's the uncle though?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to make sure I was like putting the right guy. That guy was very good in that series. One day I'll go back to it.
Yeah, it's there.
Okay.
Did you watch Mayor of Easttown?
No, I have not.
I think I like Mayor of Easttown better, and I love me some Kate Winslet.
Oh, I love me some Kate Winslet too. I feel like I haven't gotten enough of her recently. What was the last movie she was in?
Avatar, Fire and Ash.
Oh yeah.
She's doing okay, Tom.
I guess she's getting her paychecks. That's true. But it was a good performance.
Yeah.
I like that in Task. I'll just talk about it very briefly again. Rae Seahorn, she was so excellent in Pluribus. She won an Emmy, won a Golden Globe. She deserved it. Or she won a Golden Globe. Did she win an Emmy too? I can't remember.
She won some awards.
She was very deserving, though. The whole show kind of relies on her. She's kind of your lead person, and she is like the person in the show. And she goes through all the emotions. She plays them all very well. You aren't necessarily like she's the hero. She plays kind of not an unlikable character, but somebody that you're not just like fully on board with. I think like many Vince Gilligan characters, she plays somebody who's complicated. You're not just like, this person's altruistic. It's like, they're a little flawed. And you have a tough time rooting for them. But she always brings you back on her side a little bit when she's trying to get something done. And so she's my pick for my first performance.
Nice, nice.
Who's your next one?
I kind of have these into two shows, so I'm just going to continue the Task. I have Allison Oliver, who's a smaller role. She's part of the Task. She is the hot mess. I think her name is Lizzie.
Yeah.
An Irish actress, just nailing the Pennsylvania accent, just being kind of this ball of mess, but also good at their job, but also like having pathos and emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I don't know if you got far enough to see the scene with her and Sir Christian in the bar together.
Yep, I did see that one.
That's like probably one of the best scenes of the show. It's just like, I almost want to share it between both of them, because I think both of them are very good and have great chemistry. I'm always just impressed when people from across the pond nail like such a specific accent.
And he's English too, right? Or he's some kind of Brit. Or UK.
Is he?
I think so.
I thought he was not, but maybe he is.
I will find him. And I know his name is not Sir Christian Cole. That's his.
Dragon. Sir Christian Cole is English. I thought you were talking about the lead guy.
Oh, no, no, no. I was talking about the guy who played Sir Christian Cole.
But I'll round it out that, I didn't know. Do you know who the main guy is married to?
No.
Kaley Coco.
Really?
Yes.
In real life, huh?
In IRL.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. I thought the acting was kind of what was the best. The girl from Coda playing the daughter of his brother who had been killed.
Yeah.
She's great in it. Yeah. So those are the two I have from Task.
Those are good. Good picks, though, too, because they were probably the two standouts from the show. My second pick, I'm going to go back to the studio for this one. And I'm going to go with Catherine Hahn. And I just felt like of all the performances on that show, every time she stepped on screen, she was doing something funny. She was wearing something ridiculous. And she just brought an energy that show needed. It reminded me, I think, of why WandaVision and like Agatha Long worked really well, too. And it's like, oh, yeah. Catherine Hahn's just a really good actress, and she's just a great supporting player. She never, I think, is out to steal the spotlight, but she just does because she's just that good. You know, she's sort of like what do you want to call it? In football, it'd be like your offensive lineman, you know, somebody who gets the job done.
Very similar to a Rob Riggle, who's built like an offensive lineman.
That's true.
They're both just people who like kick into a room and are like the highest pitch and like super funny.
Yeah.
You know, you want them to pop up in your movie.
Yeah. But her, especially being the PR person in the episode where they are having trouble with the casting of the Kool-Aid Man movie mm-hmm. because they don't think it's diverse enough, is just, that's chef's kiss. Just really, really good stuff right there. I'll throw it back to you.
All right. I pulled from Welcome to Derry, even though I did have that in my list. I had Chris Chalk, who plays young Dick O'Halloran.
Oh, yeah.
I thought this guy is a guy who I've seen in movies and other stuff before, and he's always has kind of like this unsettling vibe to him.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, again, this I think has been something that I guess I identify as people who can have that balance, but also have like empathy in their acting, and he kind of has both.
Yeah.
I thought also his character, he's, you know, he's playing someone who's been has been played by other people before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's doing his own thing, but I could see the Dick we know from The Shining, this guy becoming that guy.
Yes.
Even though these two guys next to each other have almost seemingly different personalities.
Right. But I think that's what almost works about mm-hmm. that character, too, is that he seems a little more young and fiery here. And then Scatman Crothers' interpretation mm-hmm. is a little more meditative, a little more refined, a little more just sort of tired of it all and kind of,
yeah.
He's been through it.
I mean, the best Halloran in my book is still, even though it's just a little bit, is the guy who plays him in Dr. Sleep.
Oh,
like, if I'm comparing to, like, book and, like, performance, like, he is just that little like bit on the bench, he's amazing.
I think I need to watch Dr. Sleep again.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Got Cliff Curtis.
Yep. But you also have what's her name?
Rose the Hat.
Yeah. Rebecca
Ferguson.
Ferguson. Yeah. She's just so good. Yeah, that's a good pick though. I like him. So I actually realized I did not pick another actor, so it's a good thing we're just sort of throwing out performances.
Do you want me to just throw out my last one, then you can think, or do you got one in the chamber?
No, I got one. But yeah, it's definitely not a lead role on this show. But going back to Alien Earth, the character of Maro is played by Babu Sise, I believe is how you say his name. He's basically the cyborg that's in the mix, who's kind of trying to let all hell break loose in this lab. And he just plays a really good antagonist. And he's just very gravitating. He just kind of like, anytime he's on screen, you're kind of like, what is this guy going to be up to? He's sort of menacing, but in a very cool and calm way.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was like, when you have a lot of other people who are doing big things on this show, like Timothy Oliphant, who you always kind of have, I love Oliphant doing some different stuff in this show. He was almost my pick, but I was like, this other guy was
too handsome.
Yeah, he's just, plus that bleach blonde hair. He was giving me Sting vibes from
I just got to him in The Office.
Oh, man.
I forgot he was in it.
I didn't even remember that either. Who is he, one of the managers?
No, he is a salesperson from another company who dated Pam for a little bit.
Oh, man. So he's kind of playing his character from like Girl Next Door a little bit, just like the sleaze.
But like nice guy sleaze. Like he's a sleazy asshole, but he's got the nice guy vibe where the other guy's like more intense, I feel.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Very intense. But yeah. This dude on Alien Earth. Plus, he's very cool because he's like a person who's enhanced by cybernetics instead of being like any of the other things where he's just pure robot or like a robot with a human conscience. So I was like,
And I know a lot of people like were saying this, and at first I was like, well, are you just saying it because he's like the black guy in it? But after watching him and watching Homicide: Life on the Street, he is very much like acting like Yaphet Kotto, like similar acting vibes and presence. Yeah.
100%. And he's just, it was a guy I'd never encountered before. I was looking at his catalog. I'm like, I don't think I've seen any of these other shows or movies, but I'm looking forward to seeing more of him.
Yeah. Make him a Bond villain.
He'd be really good. We got another Bond potentially coming, but we don't know who's going to be. What's your next pick, though, for your performance?
So I'm just putting this out as a face card, and I don't mean that in an attractive way, although this person is very attractive. I just mean, like, you know, there's people who act and you see them and you're like, you're meant to be on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be Taylor Page, who plays Mike Hanlon's mom in Welcome to Derry.
Ah.
Kind of the main, one of the main characters, because it's kind of different couple of main characters. She's the one who's like stopping the kid getting beat up in the street. She's the one that, you know, she used to be like a freedom rider, but now she's living in this, like, you know, Derry town with this evil. And I just thought this was a very great performance for not having a lot to do. But every time, like, they're on the screen, I'm like looking at them because they're very vibrant looking. And you're kind of also, they're new to Derry. We're new to the show. So we're kind of like, that's our into the show.
Yeah. And she is very good in that show. Did you ever see Zola?
No.
Oh, that's a trip. That was the first thing I think I saw her in. And she's just, she brings it. She's another person you're just like, holy shit. Like, who is this person?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I think on top of being attractive, she is a very good actress.
Right. But I do feel there's just people, there's actors and actors, like, they're just have great faces for acting.
Yep.
And she's one of them.
Yeah. And you can just see her kind of fitting into a lot of different molds. Like, she looks like somebody who could be living in the 1960s. She's got that kind of face, but also it's like, if you see her in a modern day role, it doesn't throw her off. She's also in, did you ever see Ma Rainey's Black Bottom?
I did.
Yeah.
She was in that. Okay.
Yeah. And that was also another thing. I'm like, wasn't that like the 1920s, 1930s or something like that? And
do they call it phone face? What do they call it when it's like screen something where it's like that person's have seen a screen before?
I don't know what that word is. Yeah. But I feel like I understand what the term's
trying to say. I feel like as talented as they are, Zoe Kravitz, I don't know if I believe her in a previous time. Has she done a period piece?
Not that I can think of.
She seems modern to me. There's different actors and actresses where I'm like, you've seen a phone before.
Yeah, right. Jack Houston, I think, is like the one guy I can think of looks like. I think because I used Boardwalk Empire is the first thing I saw him in. Or Nick Offerman is another dude who looks like, especially, and I didn't even bring in this one up, Death by Lightning. That was another honorable mention from last year. He was good in that, but what's his nuts from Severance was the good stuff. Guy who plays Tom on Severance. He's also Mr. Darcy. You know what I'm talking about.
Are you talking about not from Severance, from Succession?
Succession, yes. Sorry, Succession.
Matthew McFadden?
Yes. Thank you.
That's why I was confused when you said Severance.
Yeah, well, they have similar sounding names.
Yeah, these are all people who can play, like, all time periods, you're saying. Yes, definitely.
He also has a face.
I'm trying to think of a good guy who does have, like, who's a guy with cell phone face? Because there's definitely ones I just can't think of anymore.
Cell phone face?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would have said
Timothy Chalamet.
Yes!
But then he looks like he's from, like...
But then he does fucking Marty Supreme, and I'm like, God damn it, he looks like such a 60s creep. Yeah.
I don't know. That'll, some will come back to. I'll have a list.
Yeah, yeah. Or no, 80. Or no. That movie throws me off because it has an 80s soundtrack, but it takes place in the 60s. Yeah,
it's like post-World War II, 50s, 60s, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, 50s, because, right, World War II. Or is it even late 40s? I don't know.
It could be late 40s. All I know is World War II is fresh in that movie.
It is. And the Japan dynamic is not lost. But, yeah, we'll think of somebody with cell phone face. Somebody who does not have cell phone face, somebody who I picked for my last performance, and it was a toss-up here, too, because in this show, I loved a lot of performances. I'm talking about the lowdown here. I mean, everybody did great. And the one I was going to pick, because I really want to shout him out, is Tim Blake Nelson, because I love, he's another guy who fits into any era, whatever. He actually doesn't even look like he belongs in the modern era. It's like they plucked him out of the 50s and he's just been imported to today. But I'm talking about Peter Dinklage, who, I love my guy Peter Dinklage. He hasn't done enough since Game of Thrones ended.
Doing a lot. He's just not doing a lot of stuff we're seeing.
Yeah, but when he popped up in this, in the lowdown, he has this one-off episode where he and Ethan Hawke are just going and chasing down this lead that he has. Just great TV. Loved that episode. I thought Peter Dinklage knocked it out of the park. Just an awesome supporting role. just he brought everything to the table you needed. It felt like he and Ethan Hawke's character had known each other for years, and you just were spot in the minute he walks on screen. And I love that, like, one of the things I love about Peter Dinklage is, like, you know, obviously he is, you know, not somebody who looks like everybody else. You always are like, it has to be about that, right? And it's not. This episode completely almost ignores his size and just focuses on, like, his personality, the character that he is. And it's like, it just crushed it. I loved him in this show. And I was like, I really want that character to come back into season two. I need another one-off where he shows up Ethan Hawke, like, around every turn. And it's just like, let's go. We're going to do this. I've already got this down. I'm going to nail it. And I think that's it for our performances. Although I did want to shout out one thing. She was not my favorite part of the studio, but I'd be remiss if we did not bring up Catherine O'Hara, who just passed away recently, kind of suddenly, it felt like. And she was very good on the studio, though, too. And I'm like, that's a huge loss to just think that's, like, one of the last things she did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So RIP to a great, and yeah, hopefully she filmed a couple things for the next season. Maybe not, but be fun to see her pop up at least a little bit again before all of a sudden done. Because, yeah, just an amazing talent that I think a lot of people didn't realize was great until too late in her career. Kind of like, I don't know, like a Rodney Dangerfield, but maybe way better than that. Mm-hmm. It's a bad analog, I feel like, but you get the idea. So,
yeah.
Anything else you want to say about the TV of last year?
I think that's all I got to say about that. Still enjoying Guy's Grocery Games quite a bit.
Guy's Grocery Games?
Yeah.
What's that stuff?
That's the Guy Fieri cooking and shopping show.
Right? Oh, man.
They shop the grocery store and they have to cook the food all in the same time.
I didn't even know this was a thing. What is
this? It combines supermarket sweep and cooking shows. It's like, you got to make this. They got to go out into the aisle. Sometimes they're like, you can only shop the even aisles, mm-hmm. or you have to pick this or this, you know. It's fun.
I imagine it's good. I'm sure at some point we'll probably come across it and it'll be a lot of fun to watch. Apologies also to a lot of reality TV that we didn't honor. Sorry, Salt Lake City, Real Housewives. We talked about you more than you'll ever get talked about on this podcast, probably ever again, but it was a fun episode.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, but Taskmaster was good last year, too. The Jason Mantzoukas episode, mm-hmm. or the season. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I didn't watch the most recent one. Just give me some time.
That's okay.
It came so quick, it felt.
There were two different seasons last year. They did a spring, and then they did a fall.
Okay.
So I think it's worth mm-hmm. evaluating it as a whole.
And now, so who's the American?
Camille.
Nice.
Yeah. So that'll be a fun season. If you guys haven't gotten on Taskmaster yet, listen to our episode first and foremost with the great Mike Schwantz, and then go and watch some Taskmaster on YouTube. It's a lot of fun. And I think that gets us to the end of this episode officially. But before we go, Fred, anything you'd like to plug?
No, I'm just going to let you plug away at the pod.
Plug away at the pod. That's all I like to do. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to rate and review it. We are on, you can find us on Facebook, Blue Sky, Threads, YouTube, Instagram, all those good ones that you love. If you have not yet signed up for our Patreon for just $1 a month, you can get one bonus episode per month. Fred, this month we just dropped an episode on our Oscar favorites, kind of in anticipation for an upcoming episode. In fact, I believe it might even be the next episode, which will be on the best movies of 2025.
Yeah.
We're in our award season, folks. Hope you're enjoying it. Lest I forget, shout out to Nick Spitza and Mike Schwantz for opening and closing themes. And yeah, we'll see you next time for Best Movies 2025.
Goodbye.
Bye.
I've got no cares, cause all I wanna do is charge my phone and drive listening to you. And what they talk about will always be a
I was early.